My dream is to be ruined as a man, plundered, taken from. Hey, can I come over? Free? I'm into serving. I'm into being on my hands and knees on your floor as you fuck my mouth. Fun, a com? Hey? Hey, hot. How was work? Oh, hello. Hey, hi. Hi, free? Photo received. Hi, nice. Any more pics? Into piss and pits too. Love it all, mate. Feet, piss, rub. Lucky you, hung. Good, thanks. A bit horny. Photo sent. Nice to meet you. I like arriving to find this particular body. Muscles just starting to push for a creamy white skin. Beard. A stomach, defined at the edges only. Restart your engines. Click here now. Click again. Refresh. Hey, refresh yourself. Click. The chest is tight, skin tight, taut, and the hair's short. Boxy, shorter guy, you look him from top to bottom. Bristle black hair and beard and cheeky glint, fella. And under the skin, these smooth turns and bumps betray a bodily hulk, and twitching power is in his flesh. Refresh, run your hand into your pants, pull at your bell end, scroll faster. Hey, what's up? Hey, so this is where I live. Hey, I want you to come round and push your cock down my throat. Fuck it. Use it. Fill me with your dick and come in my face. Yeah, yeah. Your flesh is fast and tender, and I need to taste you. You peel off your jeans and you're strapped with elastic. White crosses you, one side to the other. It stretches across this pane of flesh below your stomach. Splits, diverges, runs under the small of your back, that hallowed place, and pulls up this elastic, dive-bombing aerial across a hairy buttock, pulling back under that buttock, lost up in your arse crack, cupped into your inner thighs, leading my eye, click, more, see, more, hey, meet. Green light, go, suck my dick, report crash, go to homepage, rate me. Round the front, your jock pulls up your balls. Black mesh, red piping, cotton polyester mix, nestled in your nutty pubes, white and nutty thighs. I lay back in bed reading your messages, flicking through the photos received, checking your location. We were geolocated as I took a bus through Stokey, but I think I'll get on back onto it as I stood to see you again, to drop to my knees, waddle towards you, flash you my whites. Give it to me, use my holes. Give it to me. You step back, I inch forward. Give it to me, you push my head back. I force you to force yourself on me. I make me your slave. I pray on my knees for a violence focused on me for a change. It's my mouth, my hole you use. You want to use it. You want to abuse it. It's me you've chosen to make feel worthless. Share with friends, like. All right, I'll come round.
Welcome to Classic Friendship Podcasts, the one with the anger. That was Hugh Lemmy's Mate Chubb's reading, which is an excerpt from his forthcoming book, and I'm Roja Farkush, and I've curated this episode on behalf of Holly White. The one with the anger takes inspiration from the many people I know that use anger and occupy the affect that they are not afforded as other. I guess if you don't know what I'm talking about, then you may have been positively described as assertive. If you do know what I'm talking about, then you've probably been negatively described or been cut down by being told you're being irrational, hysterical, angry, an agitator, and unhelpful. I guess that's most others. You know, it's okay if I make a crying selfie. It's not okay if I swear and shout and scream. I think it's the way of summing up my curatorial conceit for this episode. Someone sent me a really good quote by bell hooks that I'll just read, and it says, why are we still stuck on the myth of rational and objective exchanges? Why does anger, or the expression of anger, delegitimize? Clearly it's linked to age-old notions of people of color and women as inferior because of their irrationality, whereas men, especially white men, are constructed as rational, calm, objective, and in control. next work is a form of a document of a kind of live reading sound performance by the fantastic writer and curator Eleanor Weber. He's going to be in Europe soon, and it's called Vivi.
This is the third iteration of a text written for Gob Festival, held at 55 Sydenham Road, Marrickville, New South Wales, 2204 AU, and curated by Matthew Philip Hopkins. The text was read on 8 March 2014, accompanied by an edited mix track. A redacted version was printed in UN Magazine, issue 8.1, 2014. This third iteration for Classic Friendship podcast, curated by Roja Zita Farkas and titled The One with the Anger, was recorded in Melbourne on the 30th of May 2014. Opening statements. There is a lot to say.
I don't know if it's thinking, I just think they...
None of this is live.
Go up like
there are pre-recorded emotions flattened in one track. And they traverse time and space, travel forward to you, and back again, filtered through, flattened out, aspiring to be something it will never be, dreaming of heroes and heroines I want to be, but my own way, you know? We always want to be like someone else, but we want to make it mine. All the world's problems could be solved. All the world's problems could be solved. Through the simple acknowledgement that I only exist because you does. What is the politics of heroine? What do we think? Is it actor or actress? Dominator or dominatrix? Master or mistress? God or goddess? She's a hero. She's a heroine. She's a heroine of mine. He's a hero. He's a heroine. He takes heroin. She is interchangeable. She is flexible. She flits between and slides under. Both. At once, here and there. The sex that is not one. Like, what I mean is that if you are a feminist, what is the right way to speak? Should one refuse gender binaries and use a generic term for both sexes to point to their ontological equality? Hero, actor, dominator, master, god? Thereby somehow eating or, in other words, disavowing the gender bias of language? Or should one acknowledge the gender bias of one's language and avow it by explicating gender difference as much as possible? Heroine, actress, dominatrix, mistress, goddess. I guess the problem is that all those words are euphemisms for whore. There is no feminized word for genius. Yellow finger from smoking too much on one hand and rattly chest when I twist my torso. Signs of life. Initially it became about women. But nothing's ever just about women. Just as nothing is ever, ever, ever. Nothing is ever, ever, ever just about men. Just about men. Nothing is ever just about men. The history of the world is the story of males. Ladies. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Who would want that story anyway? Though you may not be forgiven for thinking it is, you will not be forgiven. Okay, maybe you'll be forgiven, but you're an idiot. Sorry, this is a long preamble. In the end, it became about love. About love. Next question, what isn't about love? We only have to love one another to know what we must do, said in a film called Comrades, made by a Scottish artist. We only have to love one another to know what we must do. Do must we what know to another one love to have only we. And then it became somehow about politics. And I'm listening to Beyoncé XO. I wonder if really it would be better if you all read this for yourselves rather than me reading it to you, trying to. This brings me back to politics. What the hell? Are we being read the Riot Act? I don't know what that means. There is so much we don't know. How did we end up to such a horror? La 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 la, laying back, lazing about. Never take your freedom for granted. Many people aren't born free. We were lucky, but it can be taken away. I heard that last night we heard a curse. I only heard the curse in recalled form. I heard of the curse from someone who had heard the curse, or maybe he had written it. Curse writing is a job to do. I don't write scripts. I don't write books. I don't write art writing. I don't write letters. I don't write checks. I don't write ups. I don't write songs. I don't write statuses. I don't write blogs. I write curses. The witches were very real, and they were simple, simply the people, females and males, who wrote curses. What I mean is not that they only wrote curses, and they never wrote blogs or status updates, they never danced or ate or laughed or shitted or had sex or did really banal labour to get by. I use the verb to write very broadly. What I mean is that everything they wrote, in other words, everything they did, no matter in what form it appeared, was a curse. A curse on the reduction of life to misery and pointless time-wasting. A curse on the reduction of life to economic rationalism. A curse on rationalism. A curse to call upon all the irrational souls who live and lived and will live in the clunkiness of our language to say that impossible time-bending phrase of life, no present, past, future, then, now, when. The curse is to remind ourselves we should incant it, give it soul. Or in Simone Weil's words, a witch. But there are other more unfortunate creatures who have become things for the rest of their lives. Their days hold no pastimes, no free spaces, no room in them for any impulse of their own. It is not that their life is harder than other men's, nor that they occupy a lower place in the social hierarchy. No, they are another human species, a compromise between man and corpse. The idea of a person's being a thing is a logical contradiction. Yet what is impossible in logic becomes true in life, and the contradiction lodged within the soul tears it to shreds. This thing is constantly aspiring to be a man or a woman, and never achieving it. Here, surely, is death, but death strung out over a whole lifetime. Here, surely, is life, but life that death congeals before abolishing. These witches have always been around, and they always will be. Their curses are not simply in the negative. Curse is another word for life. The curse of our condition also produces the curse that makes it bearable. You see what I mean? Good morning from Sydney. I am awake early and can't get back to sleep, though tired, so lounging in bed wishing you were in it. Ha ha. The view is attached. You were chasing me up a hill? In medieval France? Were we wearing normal clothes? What does it mean? Something to do with witches? Witches. Anyone who sees beyond the lie is a witch. More of Weil's incantations. Those who believe that God himself, once he became man, could not face the harshness of destiny without a long tremor of anguish, should have understood that the only people who can give the impression of having risen to a higher plane, who seem superior to ordinary human misery, are the people who resort to the aids of illusion, exaltation, fanaticism, to conceal the harshness of destiny from their own eyes. The man who does not wear the armour of the lie cannot experience force without being touched by it to the very soul. Once upon a time, they were burnt to death, the witchy types. Now, power has worked out a way, other ways of exterminating the fire. But what power doesn't realise is that it is an inflammable fire. The curse will continue. Two nights ago, dreamt Susan was under a witch's spell, zonked out on the side of the street somewhere, paralysed on all fronts, looking like a dishevelled Kurt Cobain. The witch that cast the spell was this near-identical Gina Reinhardt, with white long hair. I got a pack of witch men, all freaks, odd fellows, at my home to try and undo the spell. However, the spectre of Gina the witch was infiltrating the premises, which resembled my place in Stanmore, and was trying to block the power of our concentration. It was real hard work. I don't remember the outcome. Please just remember that I am jumping around in time, so now we enter the past, though it's hard to tell because one reads in a linear fashion. Black magic is one very useful thing in these dark times. That is dark with an E because I believe that we are actually still living in the medieval ages. And I don't mean like, oh my god, we're living in such regressive times, things have gone so far backwards, damn, this and that.
I don't know if it's thinking, I just think they go up like instinct.
Oh my, I mean it seriously. God. We are in the actual Dark Ages. Still, the pressing question for all sentient beings is for how long they will continue. Needless to say, the Earth doesn't need us around. To put it otherwise, I mean that the bubonic plague or Black Death continues to this day, as we speak, just in more insidious, non-explicated forms. There are explanations for this. For example, one reason is there is no longer anything that isn't owned by someone. We are practically breathing rented air. If you don't have a job, what do you do? How do you eat? Why do we have to spend hours in pointless jobs just to eat? What does it mean that we have no say in what is put into our breathing air? This is a different form of death. I hope you see what I mean. Another reason that the Dark Ages never ended is very simple. Our sense of time is totally a product of our mortality. Mortality is a convenient construct for state apparatus which need to function on the basis of individual lives, competition. And in fact, on that note, even the fact that we call them ages is incorrect, as if we could refer to a past that is not also at once right here now. This is the same game of words that is played with our old friend crisis. What crisis? What do we actually mean by that word? Because it is just also another word for emergency powers. But emergency powers, as we've learnt numerous times, hit the bush, etc., are rarely revoked. They are used in very specific ways to implement certain exceptional policies that in other circumstances would be unacceptable. In this way, the crisis is endless. The state of emergency moment hides the interchangeability of all moments. If you allow this policy now, it means you will allow it then. A slippery slope. Don't believe the crisis moment will pass. If it is excusable now, it will be excusable then. If they can do it to them, they can do it to you. Do not take for granted what you have been granted. Now we aspire to immortality. Nothing's changed. Just that now the gods we pray to are Google and Botox and career advisors and curriculum vitae, etc. In other words, there is no linearity, no progress. We are living with dirt just as we were 600 years ago, just as we were 1,000 years ago, just as we will be in 200 years. The nature of the dirt changes in the same way our nature changes. These two things are totally commensurable. Third possible reason. The darkness is in fact the world. No, let me rephrase, darkness is just human life on this earth. As a dear friend always says, prove to me humans aren't a virus. This is my commandment that ye love one another as I have loved you. Intermission. Interlude. I wonder what it's thinking, or it's not thinking. I don't know if it's thinking. I just think they go up like instinct. Oh my god! Don't fall in. No. Wow! And where's its friend gone? Ooh, oh. Where's its friend gone? The other species? Oh, there it is. I wonder what it's thinking. Or it's not thinking. I don't know if it's thinking. I just think they go up like instinct. Oh my god! Don't fall in. No. Wow! And where's its friend gone? Where's its friend gone, though? Other species. Oh, there it is. End of interlude. So then it became about art. And by now I don't even any longer know what I mean by that. What do we actually refer to when we say art? Right now, it's this big exhibition in Sydney opening in a couple of weeks. And there's so much fuss, and it's like, don't shoot me. But what did you art workers bloody expect? Where do you think the money comes from? This is an industry. Money talks. It has a mouth that could look something like mine, and it just keeps talking until it stops. And then if you feed it some more, it will start again. Keep going. So, while we're thinking about the mouth, wonderful orifice, maybe we could also think about mouths that have no talk. They have no talk because they have no money. And at this point, the individual is subsumed within the state, or its lack thereof. The state's mouth has more money. More money makes more mouth talk. More talk, more mouth money. Obviously, some state mouths have more talk than others. And everyone just keep licking. The ego of artists and their groupies does not interest me. Those mouths are well fed and will keep talking. Case in point. Now I'll read a poem. Cup poem. The cup is full, whether we like it or not. We fill it up with things, like history, habits and personality traits, relations and obligations, desires, that we believe define us, give our life shape. And then we attach things to them that seem impenetrable, indisputable, like loves that come to serve as cordial that flavours all else in the cup, until nothing can be tasted anew, only through the taste of the self-spiked liquid colouring all. We toil over the slushing cup nonetheless, ignoring its bias, rearranging particles, trying to get to the essence, but never able to see clearly due to drunkenness. You are what you love, not what loves you. So said Donald Kaufman in Spike Jonze's adaptation. You are what you love, not what loves you. The next part is from the past. A failed attempt. I tried to do something, but time prevented. Was it time or being in time? Not being in time, as it were. So, we are entering the past. November 2013, to be precise. An unexpected invitation. A pseudonym given by someone else. Solana. Someone else being a euphemism for a man. But it's okay. A man who I like. Elsewhere on the globe, not paying much attention. Head elsewhere, body elsewhere, entangled in love stories, or the love story. And somewhere on the other side, the other love names me. But I didn't know it was me. Puts me in a situation, but I didn't know it was mine. Solana. Not paying much attention, because what do I care? I have no idea who that is. Solana. Eventually, it's me, it turns out. So, Solana, why? It turns out, from the other, that it was a way of creating a space, a place for me in the thing. The choice of name, however, is not innocuous. The space is created by way of a name. The name is not meaningless. The person choosing the name attaches meaning thereby. The person means something, and so does the name. Even if I, by now, have no say, have nothing to do, the name is given with intention. Oh, Valerie minus the S. Valerie Solana. Why name me that? The crux. I'm flattered. But how to be flattered by society for cutting up men? Life in this society being, at best, an utter bore, and no aspect of society being at all relevant to women. There remains to civic-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking females only to overthrow the government, eliminate the money system, institute complete automation, and destroy the male sex. This is where we come back to the present, March 2014. Or May 30th, 2014. March 2014. Life in this society being an utter bore, and no aspect of society being at all relevant. There remains, to civic-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking females, only to overthrow the government, eliminate the money system and institute complete automation and destroy the male sex. Life in this society being an utter bore and no aspect of society being at all relevant, there remains to civic-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking females only to overthrow the government, eliminate the money system, institute complete automation and destroy. Life in this society being an utter bore and no aspect of society being at all relevant, there remains to civic-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking only to overthrow the government, eliminate the money system, institute complete automation and destroy. Life in this society being a bore, no aspect of society being relevant, there remains civic-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking to overthrow the government, eliminate the money system, institute automation and destroy. Life in this society being a bore, no aspect of society being relevant, there remains civic-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking to overthrow the government, eliminate the money, automation, and destroy. Life in this society being a bore, no society being relevant, there remains minded, responsible, thrill-seeking to overthrow the government, eliminate money, automation, destroy. Life in being a bore, no society relevant, remains minded, responsible, thrill-seeking, overthrow government, eliminate money, automation, destroy. Life being a bore, no relevant-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking government, eliminate money, automation, destroy. Life bore, no-minded, responsible, thrill-seeking government, eliminate money, destroy. Life bore, no, responsible, thrill-seeking government, eliminate, destroy. Life, no, responsible, seeking government, destroy. Life, responsible, government, destroy. Life, government, destroy. Life, destroy, life. Man, cannot believe you pulled the gender card. Busted. Woman, yeah, I will pull it whenever I want, sucker. That card is stuck on you like a lick of fresh cum in the morning sun, and I meant it like I said it. The male is there no matter what, and my maleness will never touch yours, cunt. Poem of the day via iMessage. Flattened sounds, emotions, feel. The way female methodology, as opposed to co-opted version of feminism, which is patriarchal, provides alternative existence option and organizational structures and should be spread somehow, but not in the patriarchal way, which usually has to narrow everything down, render finite. How to introduce feminine way without falling into binaries and replacing old with the same old, new. Divine love always has and always will meet every human need. I would like to conclude accompanied by Yulia Kristeva. So, is there a feminine genius? The example of 20th century women has made it difficult to avoid the question, and it has led us to consider that the anxiety over the feminine has been the communal experience that has allowed our civilization to reveal, in a new way, the incommensurability of the individual. This incommensurability is rooted in sexual experience, but nonetheless is realized through the risks that each of us is prepared to take by calling into question thought, language, one's own age, and any identity that resides in them. You are a genius to the extent that you are able to challenge the socio-historical conditions of your identity. This is the legacy of Arendt, Klein, and Colette.
And now, the incredible Vicky Tingle, who is going to read us some poems.
This first poem is called Thank You for Including Me in Your Life of Endless Parties, and it was inspired by artwork by Lucy K. Shaw. Today is the first day in a long time that I have not been feeling myself. I can hear the ocean from my room and it seems sarcastic. We carried on like we've already read this book and it ends well. And you carry me on your back like luggage. Plot twist, it doesn't end well. Spoiler, it never ends well. I shut my finger in a door and said, good riddance. I began to notice things that had long seemed dead to me. I felt things. I texted, hey boy, you feel like ecstasy. Hey boy, lay your hands upon me and give me the strength to accept the things that I cannot change. Like how you moved out on me. You went back to the ocean. You seemed sarcastic. You texted, thank you for including me in your antisocial lifestyle. I moved to where the parties are, but my desktop background will always be a picture of the ocean. And if I stare soft enough, I can swear the waves are moving. If I unfocus my eyes, I can swear that my heart is beating. Sometimes unfocused eyes can feel the same as hangover eyes. And hangover eyes can feel the same as I cried over you last night eyes. And I often have a strange feeling in my eyes. Since then, I've been drinking straight rum and walking around alone, no headphones, getting turned on by misogynistic literature. Desperation. These are the things I ought to keep to myself. These are the things that I cannot change. Hey boy, I know we're of a different kind. You converse with the norms, my soul is closed for business. But that ain't no thing when you're in that North Face jacket, boy. Thank you for including me in your life of endless parties, but I'm at the coat check trying to focus my eyes. I implore you to come closer. I implore you to keep away. I'm sorry for not believing in the beauty of a string of nice-sounding words, of the way a body moves when riding waves of misguided hope. I need to thank you for the way you pressed your mouth on mine, but there are too many things that I cannot change. I dip my toe into the water. Good riddance. This is three poems about hummus. 1. I can view my own face from three different angles in a mirror that is specifically designed for that purpose. And it looks like late at night the traffic lights change colours for cars that don't come. And the children play in car parks and sing songs regarding crack smoke and 666 and dick sucking. Like 666, 666, smoke some crack and suck my dick. And it looks like this is a very apt way of looking at things. And you have to wonder, if you smoked enough crack, would your teeth fall out and make your mouth extra soft for dick sucking, but too soft to even say 666 anymore? Have I kissed some hummus into your mouth and changed the texture of your words? Can you play your childhood games and sing your songs in front of traffic lights smeared with hummus if you cannot see their color? 2. Seems like I've become addicted to my job, and I'm not very good at my job. I make mistakes constantly and feel tired constantly. I have not been in love in a very long time. Or maybe I fall in and out of love constantly. Maybe I just fall in love all the time. I can feel my brain slowing down gradually throughout the day until I go to sleep at night. I dream in color, but so does everybody. I splash water on my face when I'm hot, but only when people are looking. I have sex with people that are of no consequence, and I go home while they are asleep, because I would rather sleep alone. It just seems more normal for me. I eat hummus when I am sad, which is all the goddamn time. 3. If hummus were an aphrodisiac, I would be horny all the time. I would climb through windows crying and demanding that frightened people get sexy for me. Get sexy for me, humanity. My mouth is full of hummus. I need to share this feeling with you. Let me kiss the hummus into your mouth. This is called I Was a Sea Urchin. When I was young, I found I was a strong swimmer. Fascinated by the other children who could not swim in the water around me, my splashing arms created tsunamis and my legs pierced the tide like sea urchins. With this in mind, I grew up seeking a person with keen eyesight to watch me walk across the thin air that is what people mean to me. I yawned. I walked on water. I was a trapeze artist. I was a voyeur, taking pictures of the void in the mirror in front of me. Watch me stare into a picture of the void staring into the void. It's a reflection I can stare at for a very long time. Immersing myself in a pool of self-preservation, I could evacuate almost any relationship in moments. And I could justify this with Darwinian theory. Narcissus loves, Narcissus loves, I love as Narcissus loves. I yawned. Most people were not strong enough for my taste. Most people could not approach the air that surrounded me. This longing bred despair, and through despair I took control. Men fell in love with me, and I loved them like a knowing woman might love. Or maybe not at all. I walked on water. Something I remember from being young and out of control. No one told me it's okay to not love things. It's okay to not love anything for years at a time. I didn't love anything for years at a time. Then I was a human being, and I was a trapeze artist, filling up the air in a French circus. And then I was an open palm. I was a sea urchin, being yawned out of place. I was an out of place, fail-struck match. Narcissus loves, I love as Narcissus loves. Watch me go one step further. Watch me fall in love with this picture of the void. Watch me walk on water. Watch me go one step further. I will find out how to not love myself. I will teach you how to swim. This is called I Dare You to Oppress Me Some More, a think piece on dick chopping. Yeah, I'm gonna fuck someone inside of a blender. Gonna be a drunk piece of shit because I drank a beer in 5 seconds flat. Gonna flatten my breasts with bandages, sexually confuse some fuckers. Yeah, fuck you if you disagree with my lifestyle choices. Got plans tomorrow to go in Subway and shit all over the meat. Gonna shit on your meat because you're all sick fucks. Next time some motherfucker tries to shoplift in front of me, gonna shoplift his dick right out from under him, shove his dick in a blender and fuck it in there. Next time some sick fuck tries to oppress me because of my gender, gonna bake his balls into a vegan pastry, serve him a testicle Danish, punch him in the face, make him eat it. Fuck you if you think I'm lonely, I'm gonna grind your dick to dust. Make a dick dust sculpture of a boyfriend. You're gonna fuck my dick dust boyfriend inside an industrial meat grinder. My dick dust boyfriend has an oral fixation. Oral fixation, oral dick sensation. I'm fixated on chopping off dicks. Yeah, blink my eyes, I'm a serial killer chopping off dicks. Vagina dentata fixation. Yeah, if you're in possession of a dick, get the fuck out of my area. Unless Dickless Freak is a name you wish to be called real often. Stay the fuck away from my area. Am I worth suffering the loss of your dick for? Filling up this bag of fresh dicks daily. I'm in hell. I'm in hell. Oral fixation. I'm in hell.
The next contribution is by Jaco Polosuvo. I feel really bad because in the last, I don't know if it was the last Classic Friendship episode, my name was pronounced a bit funny, and I'm sure I just really pronounced Jaco's name badly, sorry. But he's really great. And so for this, it was quite an interesting process because I actually asked if he could turn his blog post, Dinner Notes, from last year into an audio piece for this, because I thought it was a really, really amazing post. And, you know, I think about it not all the time, but it's something that comes into my head quite a lot when certain discussions come up, and I kind of smile to myself and am reminded of that post. So when I asked him to do it, he said, oh, yeah, how about you read it? So I'm afraid you're going to have to hear some more of my voice. But I think that added, like, another dimension to it, you know, the ideas of the voice and kind of who speaks is quite important. So I did that. That was funny. And then Jaco mixed it and sent me back something even funnier. But I mean, I think it is still angry. So yeah, this is Dinner Notes by Jaco Polosuvo. Hope you enjoy it. The way he argues is energizing. Then it's antagonizing. Then I don't want to listen. My face becomes mute and inexpressive. I'm staring through the table into infinity like I do in public transport. He uses purple carrots so the bolognese would be darker, more monochrome. I don't know how to eat the piece of oxtail on my plate. He's criticizing Kanye West as an artist. He is misreading what Kanye is. He is criticizing Kanye's scrappy go-get-em trend or attitude. Through Kanye, he's criticizing the lower middle class and its undereducated nouveau riche appendixes. He doesn't know that he's doing that. He subliminally dislikes everyone who has to try hard, people who aren't born into wealth and or cultural capital. He's into sufficiently old 15th century Flemish paintings and whatever the current smart white boy filter subgenre for popular music is. He believes that authenticity and high culture are not worn out markers of the past. He can already feel the dusty apathy of the position he argues from, but won't admit it, not yet. The ease with which he mutilates other people's points of view is the main use he has for an outmoded classical education. Pretty girls smile enigmatically and look down as he puffs his chest. Do they enjoy these displays of his lecturing intellect, or do they feel embarrassed for him? Do they feel talked down to? And is that a turn on or off? He has a well-prepared, entertaining rant about the uselessness of gender theory in art education. He dislikes feminist literature. Other people's bodies, orientations, and traumas are uninteresting, he knows. He is already white and straight and has accepted what he looks like. So what's there left to talk about? He words it better. Reading your friend's confessional poetry is pathetic, he says. You and all your friends are narcissists because you enjoy using Facebook, he says. He is always reading Shelley. He uses Facebook reluctantly. He embodies criticality on Facebook. He is not your average user. He gets along well with older women who respond to his mid-20th century morals, his posh bolognese, and his measured heterosexual aggression. He annoys me to no end. It's hard to figure out why. There's nothing unique about all of this. I feel I want to fold inwards and fold and fold and fold. The way he talks about art is the way people who don't practice art talk about art. London is filled to the brim with discourse. There's no oxygen in the room. He talks about how language is violent. It's like hitting someone in the head with a rock and talking about the inherent violence of stone. Words don't kill people. Endless stern dad monologues do. It annoys me because I recognise my tendencies in him. Caring more about winning the argument than about how the world is and how others experience it. He doesn't value experiences. He wants subscribers, not friends. Failed communication, blaming spectacle or global capitalism for a sense of alienation that comes from feeling superior and being dead set on proving superiority. I hate the way he uses analytical thinking as if it was a high tool. I see massive limitations on his criticality. It acts as a filter between him and the expansive, unreasonable beauty of the earth. He simply can't handle it. He talks about moments without language, looking at a dog in the park, some kind of true experience. He doesn't understand what language is. He doesn't know ways to use it that don't require an escape or uses that coexist peacefully with an escape. There is a language that doesn't splatter worlds, language that approaches Kanye from 20 different angles, language that gently pokes and stimulates Kanye until he sources the traumas and ambitions that make up his God complex. To see Kanye not as an artist to criticise, but as an illuminated image of the early 20th century. 21st century. Someone to contemplate, to enjoy, and to write egocentric feminist poetry about. And last but not least, we have Break the Late Night Eating Habit by Georgina Miller.
Break the late night eating habit. We all know that feeling of late night eating, eating out and taking in. We get secretive, snacking to satisfy a bodily need. We wake up with a taste of that food that fed us the night before, coating the mouth, a tongue flavoured with reminiscence. The memory of it frustrates and needs picking from between our teeth. Sometimes there is guilt that comes with the scent and feel of the cheapness of it, but only sometimes. When you're hungry, you should eat. You should take that time to fill yourself, to enjoy the act of becoming full and fed. We all do it. But to you, I become just leg and thigh and breast that you cave into when you are hungry. The insides have been taken out, the guts abandoned and discarded. The worth of me becomes worthless. Any trace of organs has been cleaned away. Only the meat is left. Truth be told, when hunger sets in, the meat is all that is required. I'm a one-piece meal, sometimes a bucket, broken down into manageable pieces that you come to late at night and gorge on. We send our texts late, post-drinking, pre-feasting. The texts at least are honest. I say I want you and tell you how. You do the same. We entice. Often, though, you enforce reality upon our situation and break it down for me. There has been many attempts to remove all ingredients that could affect this dining experience we have made our own. 1 p.m. text sent in March said, I don't want much in a close personal way. Sometimes I want sex. Sometimes affection and good conversation. But only sometimes. Actual text. You ended that text by asking what I wanted and closed it with a lol. Actual lol. Sometimes that sometimes you describe changes when your head is rested in my lap after a difficult day. You'll text and say you miss me or ask me how I am. It's nice to be missed, but it's getting out of date to be missed at 2:48 a.m, 11:59, 1:07, etc. 2 years have passed since you came and put your feet under my table. The chair you pull out still scrapes the floor. You'll chew me until your jaw becomes slack and you decide you're full from me. Sometimes I see it, you getting full and bored of the meat on offer, but that's only when my meat cries or reasons for something more than the only deal on our menu. Our menu is limited and easy because I've come to know what you like. I'm a cheap eat out or a takeaway that you bring into your bed. I come delivered straight to your door and drag my meat and bones into bed beside you. The grease pools like guilt beneath us and is ignored. It's fast food that is thought over and savoured. We both eat slow. Do you do that when you eat out with others? When there's a dress code? When you have to use 2 sets of cutlery, glassware, a linen napkin to wipe your chin? When you have to be polite? My skin has turned crisp to protect the meat underneath, a tender combo of white and dark. In the beginning, it allowed me to bite, and when I bite, you like it. But when you bite, it hurts. so I become a bucket, not a bucket of love like the ones on the adverts, surrounded by smiles. I'm a bucket that knows this meal comes with no sides, no extras, but there will always be bones. Bones are all that is left when we're finished, when the skin has been ripped off with teeth and we're wiping the stickiness and mess from our hands, licking last night's juice from our fingers. The meat is chewed and swallowed, and when you leave the bed, I'm a box of bone that rattles. It does taste good, too good. Sometimes there is guilt, but only sometimes. Finger licking good. Sometimes it's nice to be devoured, but only sometimes. To have you lick your lips when you're done with me, satisfied.